now on PNP Network is Alex Harn. He's the author of a book called Possessed, The Rise and Fall of Prince. And it's a great book because he is such an incredible story and personality. You know, from the great heights that he's achieved to his self-destructive behavior that has kind of made him, at one point, a laughingstock in the country.
Well, Mark, thanks very much for having me, and I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I mean, here is someone who is an absolute musical giant. I think that's pretty widely recognized, but has also done some things that have been silly, self-destructive, and have really placed his ultimate legacy in doubt, and that's sort of the thesis of the book.
It's interesting to note there's a kind of a correlation between him and Michael Jackson in terms of their creativity, what they did for the music industry, and what they've done to themselves.
Well, you can certainly see that, and the book touches overall on some of the themes of 80s pop and where we've gone from there. And right now we're at an interesting point in pop where the music industry is in a lot of trouble, and many of the figures that were so beloved during the 1980s, Prince, Michael Jackson, are sort of looked upon as bizarre figures. I don't see Prince as quite as bizarre as Michael Jackson, because he hasn't torn his own face apart necessarily, but you can certainly see the parallels between, you know, really who are the two most successful African-American stars of the 1980s, if not the most successful stars, period.
It's interesting. I remember just admiring all the gorgeous women he used to have with him, Vanity and Sheila E. and all these folks. But from reading your book, he was obviously connected with some of these women, but there was guys around the band that were having a lot more success, and he was kind of jealous of their success.
Well, Prince's jealousy of other people's success is really at the core of the book. I mean, here is a guy who, for all his talent, is somewhat insecure about things. And in terms of his women, I definitely look at those relationships in terms of what's going on psychologically. Why is Prince kind of drawn to the same women over and over again? I mean, just superficially, Vanity and Apollonia, they look like the same person. And then some of his later lovers like Maite Garcia. So I try to explore kind of what is driving him to sort of reinvent the same relationship over and over.
I got to say, though, that he's got good taste.
He certainly does. We should all be so lucky as to attract that type of woman, certainly.
But he attracted a lot of women who were really into the music biz and wanted to be successful as well. So there was obviously ulterior motives for some of them as well.
Well, there were ulterior motives for them and for him. I think he very much wanted to be sort of feel like a Svengali character who could take these women with limited musical talent and turn them into stars. And he wasn't as successful at that as he wanted to be. He tried to do it with Carmen Electra, made her a rapper. Whatever we want to say about her acting skills, she's not a significant rapper, and his attempts to make a record around her were essentially a ludicrous failure.
Mm. Yeah, talking about a ludicrous failure, I know he hated Warners, and he had this terrible thing that was going on with Warner Brothers, but the changing of the symbol, making himself a symbol, the now famous phrase of formerly known as, made him, it was just bizarre.
Yeah, changing his name really, in retrospect, looks like such a major career blunder. I mean, during the 80s, Prince was a guy who we all thought of as strange and bizarre, but in a very cool way. He was sexually aggressive, he was androgynous, all this interesting stuff that placed him on the cultural cutting edge. Then in the 90s, it's bizarre in just simply a ridiculous way. I mean, he became a laughing stock. Howard Stern started making fun of him. No one really got it. No one took it seriously. And we see in retrospect that really did undermine his stature.
The symbol especially. I mean, you know, not formally known as Prince, people were dealing with that. But that symbol thing was just, you couldn't pronounce it. It didn't make any sense. You couldn't say what it was. It was just... It was just so bizarre that it actually I think hurt him more than anything else.
Absolutely. It really came across as sort of vanity, the idea of changing one's name.
Very pretentious. Very, yes. Very pretentious.
Yes, very pretentious and silly, whereas earlier he'd been kind of cutting edge. And in the book, I'm not saying that he's turned into some sort of failure or that he's self-destructed or that he's on drugs or anything like that. Far from it. I mean, this is a guy who is energetic and focused, But his music lost some of the magic, some of the energy, and some of the sort of cutting-edge rebelliousness that it had, and what was, for me, so exciting about him. You know, songs like 1999, Controversy, even the whole Purple Rain record was very kind of avant-garde. Then over time, we see him kind of conforming to rap music, which is ridiculous. This guy was a musical pioneer. And then we see him trying to imitate Public Enemy and people like that. It just, again, was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, none of us could understand it, why he did that. And still, even reading your book, still hard to understand psychologically, really, where all this fit.
It really is. I mean, I think at the core there's a conflict within Prince. One part of him really wants to be an artist, a serious artist who is groundbreaking, and he was that in the 1980s. Another part of him, though, wants to be a star. Remember that song, Baby, I'm a Star? There's a powerful part of his psyche that wants to be famous, that loves adoration. And the problem was, when he made interesting records and his stature kind of tailed off, on one hand he gained this artistic reputation, but on the other hand, less serious fans started peeling off, and that scared him.
Hmm. Now, you actually are an attorney as well, aren't you?
Yes, I practice litigation in Boston.
Wow. Now, do you ever get involved in the music industry in terms of clients?
Not a lot. Although I was involved, as you probably heard, in a case involving Prince. This was well before the book, but it sort of served as a precursor in a sense. There's a magazine called Uptown, which circulates out of Sweden. Very low circulating magazine, but it writes only about Prince. It's essentially a fanzine, and he sued them trying to shut them down. And this was something that troubled me as an advocate of the First Amendment, and the firm I was with at the time, we were able to get involved and represent the magazine pro bono. The case didn't go very far. We were able to settle with Prince and his attorneys, and I never saw this as kind of me versus Prince in any sense, but really simply vindicating the magazine's right to publish. And again, it's kind of a metaphor for Prince's desire to control everything. He was troubled by the idea of a magazine that was writing so much about him. He wants to control all discourse about him, in essence.
Well, how can you control it if you create such bizarre things that are going to make people write nasty things about you?
Exactly. I mean, every pop star is going to face commentary and scrutiny, but Prince really doesn't like that. There's a theme and sort of a strand in his personality that's very kind of totalitarian, which again is very ironic when viewed against his message of the 80s, which was sort of liberation, rebellion against authority. He's very much of an authoritarian character, and I think the book portrays him as kind of this very difficult, demanding, and dominating boss.
Has he ever written his own autobiography?
He never has. He never has. There have been other books written about him in the past, but nothing that really looked at his whole life, and he certainly has not done anything to fill the void either. And he's been somewhat contradictory in terms of his interviews about how he portrays his life and the things he says. This was, I think, the closest anyone's gotten to really penetrating his whole life and looking at the real story.
What was his childhood like? How did he grow up, and were there any issues there that could have resulted in some of the behavior he's had?
Well, I think certainly there is a relationship with all of us between our childhood experiences and our later behaviors. I mean, he had an unstable childhood. He kind of bounced around. His nuclear family split up, and he lived with his dad for a while, and then he lived with cousins, and he ended up living with a friend, essentially, whose name was Andre Anderson, who later became Andre Simone. So it's fair to say that his childhood was very unstable, probably emotionally difficult in terms of his relationships with his parents. Now, all that said, there are people who've had much worse childhoods, and I'm not trying to theorize that his entire career is the product of some childhood trauma, but it's definitely there. I mean, I lay out the story and sort of let the reader draw his or her own conclusion.
You know, Andre was obviously his roommate and best friend for a long time, but once Prince became a huge star, Andre got a little bit jealous of that and kind of fell out of the scene.
Exactly. Well, there was always a lot of competition between Prince and Andre. They really loved each other and were great friends, but both of them sort of wanted to be the star, and Prince in particular was the one who was most successful at dominating his friend and showing him who was boss. And I mean, this is not a guy, again, who's democratic in his approach to things. In a group like the Beatles, you see a sort of democratic, although tense democratic relationship, same with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. Prince was never willing to have that kind of analog in his life, someone who would be a true partner.
Including his wives.
Including his wives. The theme of him going for younger women, 18, 19-year-old women over and over again, to me says something. I mean, first of all, again, they're very attractive women. There's no question. But on another level, how can an 18-year-old challenge a 35-year-old musical genius? He's choosing the path of least resistance. He's not choosing women who could provide him with a challenge or perspective.
Now, you actually had a chance to talk with Ana Garcia. Ana Garcia was actually an actress and singer, a beautiful girl who, I guess, didn't she live with him for a while?
Yes, she did. It was in the late 80s, early 90s period. Ana Garcia is probably less known to some of your listeners compared to someone like, Carmen Electra or even Maite Garcia. But Ana was an important girlfriend who, again, fits this paradigm of sort of caramel-skinned, very beautiful, voluptuous. And she, again, was an interesting person, but very young, naive, not someone who was going to challenge him. And she, in essence, became one of his subjects living at his home in Minneapolis. Now, she quickly got sick of this, rebelled against it, and left. But for a while, it was a struggle for her, very much wanting to be part of Prince's life, but realizing that the price to be in his life was complete subjugation.
And it's interesting because, in the ironic twist, he was the one that was wearing a slave on his cheek.
Exactly. I mean, there's a bit of an irony that he's an advocate for freedom from corporations, but people within his enterprise don't get much freedom from him, don't get much ability to do their own thing. So I think there's a bit of a double standard. I don't think he's any different from many, brilliant leaders or musicians or what have you. But it is very interesting, and what I look at in this book is sort of what are the consequences of that. The fact that he was so authoritarian, so unwilling to accept challenge in any part of his life, what have been the consequences musically? And I think that ties back into what we were talking about earlier, the kind of artistic decline. In the 80s, he had some interesting people around him that challenged him, taught him about new things, and they were all eventually cut out, and that's really the sad part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of very talented people around him, too, that if he had actually worked together with them in a long-term situation, there's no doubt that he'd be still producing some of the best stuff around.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at Wendy and Lisa, who were a big part of his band in the mid and late 80s and then were cast out of the fold. Not to make a case that they're musical geniuses, but between those two women and Prince, there was an incredible synergy. He had the sort of spare funk sound, and they had this kind of emotional, feminine sound to their music, and it really was an interesting mixture. Again, we see with Lennon and McCartney, their synergy was more than they separately, despite the great music they did separately. And with Prince and Wendy and Lisa, it's a similar kind of situation.
Then you look at people like Rosie Gaines, who was the vocalist on Diamonds and Pearls, and I guess that he didn't treat her very well.
No, Rosie Gaines is an extremely talented singer and songwriter, and the problem was that here's a person who could challenge Prince. She was talented in her own right, and he promised that he would help her make a record, and they did work on some songs together, but he just didn't follow through in the project. Why? Because he was spending all his time with Carmen Electra and other people like that making their records.
And he didn't give her any credit anyway.
No. She has alleged that he failed to give her complete credit on some of the songs she helped compose. There's a lot of allegations about this from Prince's bandmates. And, you know, as I discuss in the book, it's hard to be sure who's right and who's wrong because the process of creating a pop song is so sort of indefinable. But there are these allegations that come up over and over again, and Rosie leaves in a frustrated huff from the band, and it's too bad because you want to compare her to some of the other people that he spent more time working with in the 90s. Well, it's no contest. She's more talented.
Hmm. I like looking at Vanity, though, and Apollonia and Sheila E.
Well, certainly they're all very attractive, and Sheila E., I guess, of that group is clearly a talented musician.
Excellent,
and a big
yeah.
part of his band.
Yeah.
So he's a fascinating story, and that's really what made me want to write the book.
And you've written it. It's called Possessed, The Rise and Fall of Prince from Alex Hahn. It's from Billboard Books, and it's available everywhere that books are sold, including the Internet. It's a really nice book, and a lot of fascinating reading if you're a Prince fan. And even after you're done with it, you're still going to say, wow.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. And I just wanted to mention, if people would like to visit my website, it's called princepossessed.com, one word, and it talks a little bit more about the book.
I will. We'll put a link to it, Prince Possessed, on our website when we post the interview.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Good luck.
Been a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.